Oh my goodness. Today, to celebrate the end of season one, I have a treat for you. As I'm sure you've noticed, each time I ask a guest these questions, our conversations go in wildly different directions. The same question might get Gia Tolentino wondering about her life's purpose, Ronan Farrow pursuing decades-old government secrets, or Stephen Fry thinking about Amazonian tree frogs. And while every guest thinks about these questions in a unique way, we don't always get to share every answer. For the sake of sharing episodes with you that aren't too long, we had to leave some memorable moments on the cutting room floor. So today, we're picking up those pieces. In this episode, I will share with you a few of my favorite answers that weren't in the original episodes to help close out season one of Mini Questions. Think of them as deleted scenes, but don't worry. While season one is wrapping up and I'm off to film a couple of movies, Mini Questions will return for season two very soon. And please be sure to let me know in the comments or reviews if there are new guests you'd like to hear from. Now, let's get into some of these deleted scenes. Here is today's show anchor, Hoda Kotb.
What quality do you like least about yourself?
I am two things that I wish I was less of. I'm super bossy, which is annoying to all. And I'm weirdly, at the same time, I think I'm a pleaser.
A bossy pleaser.
A bossy pleaser? Is that possible? I mean, my sister is like, okay, stop being so bossy. And I can't help it. Joel is, he just like watches me spin around and call all the shots. And he must be like, when it all comes down, he's like, okay, now can we discuss? You're good? Okay, let's have a conversation about it. And I think at the same time, like, I want to make people feel so comfortable that I sort of will turn myself into a pretzel to make sure they feel good.
That's interesting. I feel like it's a very female experience, that of turning yourself into a pretzel whilst also having to make shit happen.
Yes. I mean, that's really it, because I feel like I'm always trying to make the trains run on time and make sure we get where we need to get and do all the things we need to do. And at the same time, I find myself doing this. And it's so funny because the other day, I must say sorry a lot. I don't even realize it, but Hope, my two-year-old, goes, sorry, Mom, sorry. I'm like, oh God, you're two. What am I doing? And I hear my words coming out. And then I saw my daughter was playing with a little boy. What she said, Calvin, what did you have for lunch? And he said, grilled cheese. And he said, what did you have? And she said, same like you. But she didn't. And I was like, does this start now? What's happening?
Yeah.
I mean, is that in her? Like, she's already trying to make him feel like I'm like you. And I thought it was weird. But at the same time, I was wondering, you know, I don't even know what I'm modeling half the time. I feel like I'm just living. And maybe they see, I don't know.
You have to just live, though. I mean, I'm all for self-inquiry and, you know, being aware of like your behavior, but you simply cannot curate every second of what comes out of your mouth. I sort of wish I could, but it's just not possible. But that is interesting about same like you, because I remember doing that really young, particularly with boys, you know, as a identifying heterosexual cisgendered woman, I learned to please boys really, really young.
Yeah, the bossy thing I'm going to work on.
I like the bossy. I think bossy's good. I think bossy should have another word. I think it should just be called excellent.
Yeah. So, okay, I'll take that.
Bossy's just like, I know what's supposed to happen. Just let me make it happen. Shut up and let me do it.
Everybody, get out. Here we go. I just need open road and everything gets done.
That's exactly right. I'm going to now say, Hoda. Oh, yeah, Hoda. Oh, isn't she a bit bossy? No, she's a bit excellent.
I like that. I'm stealing it.
Okay, good. You can have it.
Here is writer and global health advocate Chelsea Clinton.
So, love, what relationship, real or fictionalized, defines love for you?
I love my parents. I was really close to my grandmother, who passed away almost a decade ago. Mm. I spoke to her, at least tried to speak with her every day.
Wow.
I love my husband. We've known each other since we were kids and we were friends for more than a decade before we fell in love and, you know, got married. And now I've created kind of love and action in these three amazing beings that I just am so thankful I get to be their mom. And so for me, love is being able to love my children, to be able to care for them and hopefully make them laugh and pick them up when they fall down, literally and metaphorically. Teach them what's worth their tears and not. So when they just sort of trip and fall and they're okay, like not worth their tears versus like if they're actually bleeding, worth their tears. Or for the older kids, when their baby brother like knocks down their magnetile tower, which happens, you know, fairly frequently, like I get that that's totally frustrating, but not worth their tears versus like, you know, when they're missing their cousins and they haven't seen them for more than a year, like.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, they can cry about that. That's painful. That's a lot. And so that to me is love. And my daughter Charlotte's obsessed with sharks and she wants to save the sharks. And so we talk a lot about the environment and how, you know, love for ourselves and love for each other also has to, I think, be love for our planet. And she's six, but she can like carry out the cardboard recycling, or at least, you know, with some help. And so like, I think all of that is love, like, you know, making them laugh, picking them up, teaching them to be good citizens.
Yeah. And how to love.
And how to love, and how to love each other. I think especially, like, I was an only child, and so, like, how they love each other as siblings has also been a new experience for me because I didn't have any siblings growing up. My husband had 10 siblings, so wow. Thankfully he has a lot of experience to draw from. So all of that to me is love.
I love that. This wonderful man called Mike Coots, who is one of the great environmental advocates for sharks.
Oh, okay.
He was a pro surfer who had the lower half of, I can't remember which leg it was, bitten off by a shark. And he surfs now. He surfs still. But he is the most extraordinary advocate for these animals that changed his life definitively, but in a way that, I mean, it's a really interesting and beautiful exploration of the extraordinary spectrum of love and fear. It's really amazing. He has an Instagram that is quite beautiful and some videos that Charlotte might really like.
Yeah, thank you. Because she's loved sharks now half her life. I mean, when she was three, we went to the New York Aquarium and she just became mesmerized by these animals and wanted to learn everything that she could about them. And thankfully, she had a wonderful preschool teacher who read her books about sharks. And then we kind of checked some books out from the library and then we bought more books. And she just really, you know, if you ask her what she wants to be when she grows up, she says she wants to be a shark scientist.
Oh my gosh.
And she's had the same answer, whereas my four-year-old has like different, like he also wants to be a scientist, but the type of scientist he wants to be kind of changes every day. But for Charlotte, it really is like she, and I have no idea what she'll be when she grows up, but for now to have had this consistent passion and commitment, and she talks to all of our family about sharks, and she wants her cousins and her aunts and her uncles to know about sharks and to really appreciate them and not be scared about them and to know why they're the caretakers of the ocean. And
why they're so fundamental to the cycle of the ocean. I mean, really genuinely. That's so amazing that she's identified this thing that is a figure of, you know, it has so much fear attached to it. And they are genuinely such necessary, beautiful, extraordinary creatures.
Yes. Yes. And just that I've already learned so much from her is so fun as a parent, right? That she's already taught me so much about sharks.
That's amazing.
Is awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Next up, we have actor and director Coleman Domingo.
Perhaps you could tell me in your life something that has grown out of a personal disaster.
My writing, to be honest. The stories that I write and the plays that I write, I think a lot of times sort of document or touch on something that I miss dearly, which is that little house in Philadelphia where I was raised, where I felt tethered with all this love and hope. That family unit that is no longer. Terrible tragedies. Because I lost my parents within 6 months of each other. It was one truly devastating year.
Wow.
But with that, I think I poured all my energy into my art and then to my storytelling. Because I like to tell stories that are complex and about who we are. I think they're always trying to bring people together. They're always trying to show people the best parts of themselves, that they will get through something. I think it's also possibly for myself, to be honest. to write it for someone else to actually get through that thing that you got through, but you know it was harrowing and you know that you could have fallen at any time. And that's the truth. I do look at my own tragedies that I've had as, I guess, things that, it sounds weird, but things that were mine. Not that I needed, but they were mine. They were my things to cross. They were my gifts in some weird way. We don't want these gifts, but they are our gifts, and we take them with us, and we hopefully make them transformative. We show other people the way. The thing that many, that I think I do recognize even more so, and I think we've been doing our work for a long time, is that it is work of the soul. And it's like you have to pour it all in there, all the tragedy, all the good times, all of it. And it's going to help you establish a new truth, and the truth in creation. I know it's definitely the way I write, the way I create, the way I create opportunities, not only for myself, but for others. It's because of the tragedy that I've had. I have a production company because I want to make sure people are taken care of. I feel like I don't leave it to everyone out there. I don't leave it to just writing a letter or getting upset about circumstance. I will create it. I will create the world that I think in the container that it should live in. And I don't know where I get that from. Again, I don't know where I get this from, where I feel like I think everything in my past would have set me up to feel like I didn't have agency in the world. But that's not the truth. I think it's my mother and the way she raised me, believing that I can make a difference, that although we had no money, but everything was available to me. I'd never believed that something wasn't available, whether it was love or money, access. I've always walked into a room believing that everything was available to me. And you just lead with love. You lead with grace. I don't know, and it seems to, knock on wood, been working out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an amazing thing, though, to not come at any of it from a point of view of paucity, and also to come at it from the idea that you can take things that are difficult and turn them into something else. I don't think alchemy gets a big enough shout out, frankly.
Alchemy needs to get the biggest shout out in the world because it is transforming that.
And it's always possible.
Always.
It's just up to you. It really is up to you in the way that you see it or what you choose to do with that fuel, because it's all fuel, right?
All of it. Every bit.
This next question is from my conversation with actor Anna Faris.
All right, love. So what question would you most like answered?
It is tough to think about potentially dying without understanding a larger picture, I suppose. I would love to be around for an extraterrestrial idea.
For an interaction with an extraterrestrial?
I don't need to interact. I just need to see it on the news.
Oh, you just, of course, because you don't want to.
I just wanted to happen in my lifetime.
You just wanted to happen.
I think that would be really fucking cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Minnie, what about you? Can I ask you?
I mean, I asked this question because I really am so, I'm so interested, but I realize in having asked it so much, because so many people, Ben, myself included, go, well, I want to know what happens when we die. But really what it is I want to know how to talk to the dead people. I really feel like if what we're talking about is energetic frequencies and that, you know, our bodies are matter vibrating at a certain level that our optic nerves can perceive, and that if being dead is just being non-physical, I really want to know how we can, I just want to speed up our evolution and our advancement. I'd like to speed ahead and see if we've developed these ways of dealing with the more subtle frequencies. Does that sound bananas? It sounds kind of bananas, but I mean, I think it's true.
No, it, well.
Well, semi.
No, it doesn't sound bananas. It does. I mean, I'm getting to the age, and I know that you've experienced death of late, and I'm getting to the age where my friends and I, our parents, are becoming ill, and we are thinking about these things in a slightly different way. But I love what you told me on my podcast. I think about that a lot. You said that grief is love amplified.
It's an amplification of love. Yeah. it is. It is enormous and it is amazing. And it's kind of like the crone living in the scariest house on the block. Like everybody's frightened of her. Nobody wants to go in and talk to her. Nobody wants to be associated with her. But she really has so much wisdom and there is so much life in grief. It's a really funny thing.
And there's regret too, I would imagine. Is there regret?
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends. And you know, when you start going through the litany of things that you wish you'd said or done differently, because you do, I don't know that it's regret exactly. It's more like you examine everything. You examine it almost like it's under a microscope. And then, weirdly, the things that just don't need to be held onto anymore are the things that fall by the wayside. You keep shedding, I keep shedding layers of stuff that just was not interesting to keep alive when my mother herself was alive, and things that we talked about. And now the things that I think about are almost like the distillation of what I loved about her and the distillation of our conversations and the things that she taught me. Because I feel like I look more like her. It's weird. It's because I feel like I'm inhabiting more of what she meant and felt.
That's kind of an amazing idea.
Yeah, it's really weird. It happened the other day. Like I was looking in my rearview mirror and I caught sight of myself and I got a shock because I looked like her. It's really strange. I mean, I'm sure it's all part of the kind of the psychological journey. But I would love to know how we're going to evolve. I would love to know how human beings, if we are actually going to develop more areas of our brain, if we are going to evolve beyond the kind of the hideous sort of warmongering and all of the cruelty that just has seemed to be this back and forth of the haves and the have-nots and the powerful and the powerless. Will that ever change?
I don't know.
I know. I have quite a lot of questions that I'd like answered, but
I think,
you know,
it feels necessary.
We probably have to go quite a long time into the future.
Probably, and our gender will probably have to take over.
Yeah. Oh, probably. Oh my God, it just feels exhausting having to be in charge. Oh God. Oh my God, seriously? It's going to be a matriarchy? Oh my God. I'm exhausted. I don't get enough sleep as it is. Jesus. Oh, Anna, you do it. No, you.
No.
And finally, here is former Prime Minister Tony Blair.
I will ask you very quickly, because I know you have to go, what would be your last meal?
You know, I could go sort of really good fish and chips reminds me of my youth, and I would love that. I like a really simple pasta. It depends if my last meal was...
You can have as many courses as you want. It's your last meal.
Yeah, that's so in that case, and provided we're not going to go into sort of La Grande Bouffe style... So I would like a whole array of different dishes, small amounts. Yeah, Japanese maybe. I don't know. But look, you know, I think if I knew it was my last meal, I've got a feeling my thoughts would be elsewhere.
They might. I could definitely consider my mortal coil and have an apple crumble, like a whole one. Yeah. Could definitely think about spirituality and eat everything that you said. I'd eat all of that. And then roast chicken.
Yeah, apple crumble. My mum used to make great apple crumble. Yeah.
Mine too. It's my favourite pudding.
It's very English, actually, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you get good apples here. I mean, not to disparage America, but I've very rarely had really good apples. You can't find cooking apples in America either.
Right. Rhubarb. Mm. Rhubarb crumble. That's good too.
Well, there you have it. The deleted scenes of season one. In listening to all of these again, I started to think back on why I wanted to start doing this podcast. And I've been reflecting on whether I've accomplished a piece of what I set out to do. You've heard me say this before, but my mission with this podcast was to create a cultural anthology, an investigation into the human experience, with each episode presenting a new guest, a new data point in this great experiment. And I'm not done.
Mini questions will return for season 2, and I hope 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and on and on. One season does not a cultural anthology make. But I've gleaned an insight or two, and I hope you've been able to do the same. One I think about most often is whether you're a rock star performing for a stadium full of adoring fans, or a correspondent reporting on climate change, or a 12-year-old trying to go to school, a peaceful moment is usually a happy one. So I hope that until we chat again, you have many, many happy moments of peace. I also hope that you have a meal where you never get full, and get to eat lots of oatmeal, fried chicken, chocolate mousse, and mashed potatoes without ketchup. In the meantime, be sure to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at DriverMini, and subscribe to Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts to ensure that you'll be the first to know about our new episodes. I really thank you with all of my heart for having listened and gone on this journey with me. It's been an amazing experience, and I'm extremely grateful that I have the opportunity to do this and to share these conversations with you. Until next time, keep asking mini questions. I think you will find that whether your questions reveal similarities or differences, you will invariably foster connection. Because I found it is our questions, not our answers, that bring us together.
Mini Questions is hosted and written by me, Mini Driver. Supervising producer, Aaron Kaufman. Producer, Morgan Lavoie. Research assistant, Marissa Brown. Original music, Sorry Baby, by Mini Driver. Additional music by Aaron Kaufman. Executive produced by me, Mini Driver. Special thanks to Jim Nicolay, Will Pearson, Addison O'Day, Lisa Castella and Anique Oppenheim at WKPR, De La Pescador, Kate Driver and Jason Weinberg, and for constantly solicited tech support, Henry Driver.